rocket loaded. Level up, you've got to meet. From the concert halls to the juke joints, from churches to festivals in the fields, welcome to another episode of Bill Street Caravan, celebrating the sounds of Memphis for more than 20 years.
Heard around the globe on NPR Worldwide. Major funding for Bill Street Caravan is provided by the AutoZone Corporation and Memphis Tourism.
Hi, I'm your co-host, Pat Mitchell-Worley.
And I'm Jared Boyd.
This week on Bill Street Caravan, we'll be hanging with former Memphian and acclaimed singer-songwriter Todd Schneider.
Grammy-nominated blues man Guy Davis will be with us to deliver an installment of the Blues Hall of Fame, an exploration of the lives of the pioneers and innovators enshrined in the Blues Hall of Fame here in Memphis, Tennessee. Brought to you by the Blues Foundation.
That's all coming up right now on Bill Street Caravan.
Hey, Pat.
Hey, JB.
It's always a great time for a homecoming, and this week we're welcoming Todd Schneider, who cut his teeth as a young musician in Memphis, back to the city once again.
That's right. It'd be no big surprise if several cities staked their claim on influencing Schneider, both in the studio and on stage. But the journeyman performer spent several years refining his art in the Bluff City as a pupil of the great Keith Sykes.
Snyder's new album, Cash Cabin Sessions Volume 3, is a collection of musings dedicated to Snyder's current home of Nashville. But we wouldn't hold that against him now, would we?
Oh, there'd be no reason to. As the title of the album suggests, Snyder's songs were recorded during a sojourn in Johnny Cash's cabin in Hendersonville. That's right outside of Nashville. So it would be only fitting to acknowledge that the push and pull between the two cities is a motif that appears in both Cash and Snyder's biographies.
When we caught up with Snyder and his tour bus, he was able to get candid about how both music scenes function and the impact that both have had on his growth as a person and as a musician.
Less of a melodic affair than some of his previous works, Snyder's latest full-length offering is an exercise in verbose streams of consciousness. In nearly each song, he mutters lengthy, talkative takes on the world around him, often in an incredibly tongue-in-cheek manner.
Throughout the album, Snyder breaks the fourth wall, singing songs about what it's like to write a song, and directing lyrics to the audience about the structure of the song in which he's singing.
It's truly a testament to a long story career that Snyder has been able to pull off these sort of devices in his music while still being able to deliver to his deeply devoted audience.
Deeply devoted is totally right. There was a line outside the theater at the Crosstown Concourse of folks waiting to get into this sold-out evening event. And it's a wonder that any merch was sold. I mean, tons of people were already wearing Todd Schneider shirts.
I'm sure some of those T-shirts were more than 20 years old. The man still got a lot of love in Memphis, and he still got a lot of love for Memphis.
And you can hear that love all up in the room through his performance. So let's listen in. Here's Todd Schneider live on Bill Street Caravan.
And then I'll tell you what he said after. He tried to look like he had a little bit of money. He grifted with a southern draw. Well, I could tell right away by the way he was running at that boy, which was begging to crawl. At least the junkie knows what he needs. You get a man all strung out on his own greed, and he will give up everything he's got for just one shot at having it all. He's taking every last cent of his savings on a trip down the local track. Had a tip from a friend, put it all down the wind. Trying to win it back. He wanted easy money. He said, but it's true. Everybody wants the most they can possibly get. For the least they can possibly do, they want that. Don't understand. watching him from her table. Not too soft, not too tough. She figured by the money that he'd been throwing around, hey, you're damn sure good looking enough. So she worked her way over, got him a wink, he took his last $5 and bought her a drink. By the time they hit Motel 6, they figured they was in love, love, there's in love. She loved that easy money. Hey, girl, it's sad, but it's true. Everybody wants the most they can possibly get. Up a hill to get my fortune read. I can still take rejection, but it's getting harder to do. Genius dog. God, I can tell if some of you caught that before I did. Hang on a second, man. I can still take rejection. Okay, I'm gonna start over. Somebody asked for it. Walking up a hill to get my fortune read. I could still take rejection, but it's getting harder to do. Oh, pity now. Wish I could show you how you hurt me. way that wouldn't hurt you too. Tennis shoes hanging from your telephone wire. I got a little money, I could get a little higher. I was all right for a while, but you know how it goes. They say everything in moderation, including moderation, I suppose. I never did like the people where I was employed. They were always out to get me cause I'm paranoid. Now I'm working for myself and that don't pay a lousy dime. If what we are here to do is learn to forgive each other, I'm gonna need extra time. Too soon to tell. Too soon to tell. Too soon to tell. By and by, thought it's too soon to tell what's going to happen to you when you die. It's too soon to tell what we will ever avenge. They say that living well is the best revenge. I say bull. The best revenge is revenge. This is an over, we gonna meet again. I say good Lord, if you're still up there, you have sure got some nerve. It seems like even the wicked, we get worse than we deserve. We're afraid to die. Every man, not one of us, I swear to God, it's like you're making fun of us. Not worth keeping, or too good to keep it. You got a better secret, better keep it from me. And if you're so God Almighty, well, then what's with all this mystery? I would love to trust you, buddy, but you're clearly keeping secrets from me. Too soon to tell. Too soon to tell. By and by. Lord, it's too soon to tell what's gonna happen to you when you die. Let the fortune tellers on the second floor and bright red letters hanging off of a door, it said closed. I think it might have been a sign. I said, don't give up on me, baby. I think I could be losing my mind. I have just met too many people. I love them all too much. They're scattered all over this whole country. I could never possibly stay in touch with all of them. I'm traveling, man. Almost forever, it seems. I woke up one morning with a lot more memories than dreams. Low red clouds rolling over my head. I'm walking down the hill without my fortune read. I can still take rejection, but it's getting hard to do. I wish I could show you how you hurt me in a way that wouldn't hurt you too. I can show you how you hurt me. Really wouldn't hurt you too.
Here's more from Todd Snyder live on Bill Street Caravan.
Out my window when a it's almost over. I can almost see the sun behind these clouds. But looking back on where I was a year ago today, I keep laughing at the shade I'm in now. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. Well, all I heard was how I should get ahead. Seems like growing up, it isn't anything but all this indecision with these debts and doubts and worries hanging over my head. When I was a child, as a child, oh, I wish I could remember what I said. I wish I could find that old time feeling someday, someday between where I've become. You know, someplace down the line, this all must have seemed appealing. So I suppose it must work for some. I wanna go back to going crazy, believing every word that I was told. You know, sometimes growing up, I feel like I might be getting wiser, and then other times I feel like I'm just getting old. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. All I heard was how I should get ahead. And now growing up, it isn't anything but all these decisions with these debts and doubts and worries. They're hanging over my head. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I wish I could remember. Lord, I wish I could remember. I wish I could remember what I said.
Todd Snyder, live on Bill Street Caravan. For more info on Snyder, visit toddsnyder.net.
We'll be back with more music from Todd in just a bit.
Up next, Grammy-nominated bluesman Guy Davis takes us through the life histories of the pioneers and innovators enshrined in the Blues Hall of Fame. This segment is brought to you by the Blues Foundation, and it's also available as a standalone podcast through iTunes.
Yeah, tell me, baby, what's wrong?
Johnny Ace and Big Mama waved, smiled, bowed, and headed off stage as the cheers died down. It was Christmas night, the late show, and they had one more set. Johnny opened the dressing room door and saw empty bottles scattered across the floor. Johnny's girlfriend and Big Mama's girlfriend were already there, smoking and joking, with a DJ from KCOH known as the Bellman. Johnny sat on a dressing table and threw his arm around his girl. Johnny took the vodka bottle out of the Bellman's hand and swigged. Big Mama practically snatched it right out of his mouth. Johnny pulled a pistol out of his pocket faster than Big Mama put the bottle to her lips, pointed the gun at her, pulled the trigger. Everyone shrieked. Snap. Johnny laughed. Big Mama grabbed the gun out of his hand. "Don't you point that thing at anybody else," she told him. Big Mama popped open the revolver's chamber, spun it like a roulette wheel, and put the gun back in Johnny's hand. He snapped the chamber shut. "It don't shoot, see?" he said, and pointed it at his girl's head. Snap!
Everyone was cussing and yelling. Johnny cackled. "I ain't gonna hurt anybody," he said. He looked down the barrel, pressed it to his temple, and pulled the trigger. Bang. Big Mama looked at Johnny and saw his eyes roll. He drooped, keeled sideways, and crashed to the floor. Everyone still thought he was kidding. He just lay there smirking with a penny hole in the side of his head. Then the red blood spilled out of the other side like ink. They screamed and ran. The bellman called his radio station to break the news. Somebody had to tell Mr. Roby that his biggest star was dead. Don Roby stayed home for Christmas night and left his business partner, Evelyn Johnson, to handle the money at Johnny and Big Mama's show. The duty of informing Roby of the tragedy fell to Evelyn. Big Mama came along for moral support. In the car, Evelyn clicked on KCOH. The tribute had already begun.
So, darling, I sing my song.
Don Roby opened the door. He had on red slippers and a green robe. He held a crystal tumbler full of golden liquid. Evelyn wore black patent leather heels, a tartan skirt, and white cashmere sweater. Behind her stood Big Mama Thornton. They heard KCOH crackling behind him. They stared at him. Big Mama shook her head. He could smell Big Mama's cigar smoke, Swisher Sweet. He looked up and said, "How could I have killed him? I wasn't even there." It's no accident that everyone, including his own business partner, suspected Don of having a hand in Johnny's death. He spent years deliberately building the reputation that fit right in with such a scheme. Every storyteller has a medium, from radio, TV, movies, and magazines right down to the front porch. Don Roby worked the grapevine. He knew that a power gesture travels word of mouth through a small community like the music business. Roby liked to bundle all the cash he'd make from a show at his nightclub, stuff it in a money bag, and walk it into the bank with his gun in his hand to make the deposit. When a rumor made the Houston nightlife circles about a con man getting the best of Roby in a deal, Don found the man on the street and punched him out where everyone could see. His myth reached epic heights back when he won the contract of Johnny Ace. The conquest began when Roby got a call at the Peacock Records office from a disc jockey in Memphis. The jock said, "I don't know much more about records than how to play them." Roby listened. "But I cut a song on this kid that's a guaranteed hit." The DJ went on. "I met your sales guy here at the station. He said you know how to get the thing in stores. Get it some airplay. Collect from distributors." Roby's silence unnerved the DJ. He kept talking. "I just think it'd be a heck of a thing for a white DJ and a black mogul such as yourself to go in together down there." At last, Roby spoke. "I'm a black man and a white man. I can whip your tail or outsmart you." "Okay. I started a little record company called Duke Records." Roby said, "Send the master back with my salesman, and the partnership begins." Roby hung up. The white DJ barely knew what was going on, but shipped Johnny Ace's record to Houston, half on good faith and the rest out of fear. The DJ heard nothing more from Roby for 2 weeks. He found a fresh issue of Billboard in the lobby at work. He opened it up and flipped to a full-page ad. "Don Roby proudly introduces Duke Records. The hot new R&B company debuts with the smash hit My Song by Johnny Ace." As the next issues of Billboard would attest, the ad was more like a prophecy. My Song reached number one on the R&B charts and stayed there for 2.5 months. But the DJ heard nothing from Roby. Worse yet, he received nothing from Roby, not a nickel. The DJ built up the courage to go see his silent partner in person. He walked right into the Peacock Records headquarters and into Don Roby's office. "I'm here to work," he told Roby. "I quit my job and I want to do my part for the company." Roby gave a moment's eye contact. He slid open a desk drawer. He removed a silver 45 caliber handgun. The DJ saw diamonds glinting in the grip. Roby set it down on the desk in front of himself. He slid open another drawer and he pulled out a little bundle of cash and tossed it on the desk in front of the DJ. And another. In all, Roby tossed out 10 little bundles without saying a word.
He rocked back in his chair and looked the DJ in the eye and said, "You got bought out." The story got around through the small fraternity of rhythm and blues record companies, performance distributors, and radio people. Stingy distributors began to pay Roby back from records he'd shipped them years before. Don deeply appreciated the ripple effect of one powerful gesture. After Christmas night 1954, virtually everyone in the business simply said, "Johnny got bought out." Roby did nothing to clear the air. Johnny's funeral was the biggest story in the news. B.B. King and Bobby Blue Bland served as pallbearers. Mourners lined up for blocks and filed past Johnny's station wagon parked outside the church. Roby bumped into Big Mama Thornton standing over Johnny's open casket. "You sure know how to throw a funeral," she said. She tucked a bullet into the pocket on Johnny's suit and walked away. After Johnny sank beneath the soil, Don went for a golf date with a radio station general manager. "Tough break with Johnny," radio man said. "Hey, that night nearly killed me, too," Don replied as he lined up a putt. The radio man felt a drop of sympathy. Curious, he tilted his head to ask how. Don said, "I had to give 3,000 refunds when Johnny couldn't go back on." He smirked and sank his shot. "Kid picked a terrible night to die," Don said. Johnny dropped right when his new single dropped.
"Forever, my darling, my love will be true."
Roby rocked back in his desk chair. Evelyn Johnson sat across from him. He held up the new issue of Billboard and read to her. The recent death of Ace gave added impetus to what would probably have been heavy first-week sales in any case. "Pledging My Love is spiraling upward at dazzling speed." Roby looked at her before completing the sentence. "Almost as popular with pop customers as with R&B. He set down the magazine. "Pop, Evelyn," he repeated. "White people are buying this record." He reclined back in his chair. "Our number one R&B hits ship maybe 50,000 a year. A pop hit ships a million." He pushed a piece of paper across the desk. Evelyn saw William Morris Agency letterhead. Don said, "This deal splits ownership of Pledging My Love with the biggest entertainment company in pop music." He looked Evelyn in the eye. "They're going to pitch it to everyone on their roster. Sinatra, Satchmo, think of it. I get half of every penny that song makes over on the pop side." Roby felt a hand on his shoulder. He smelled Swisher Sweet Smoke. He turned his head to look, but was stopped by the cold barrel of a gun to his temple. Big Mama took the pen out of Don's hand. She signed her name to the contract and slid the paper across the desk to Evelyn. Evelyn looked at Don and signed her name. Don Roby added his signature as Evelyn told him, "You got bought out."
"Forever, my darling, our love will be true, always and forever. I love just you."
Bill Street Caravan has brought the sounds of Memphis to public radio airwaves for more than 20 years. And now you can see what we've been talking about. Check out our series of digital shorts through our website or go to ilistentomemphis.com.
I Listen to Memphis is about Memphis music today, the people who make it, and the places and culture that fuel it. IListenToMemphis.com.
Thank you.
Sound is proud to support Beale Street Caravan and many other arts organizations that strengthen the greater Memphis community. Parts are just part of what we do. AutoZone.com.
Beale Street Caravan is also supported by awards from Memphis Travel, Tennessee Arts Commission, Arts Memphis, and Tennessee Tourism. TennesseeVacation.com. The soundtrack of America was made in Tennessee. We're back, and for those of you who are just tuning in, we've got singer-songwriter Todd Snyder on the show today.
Snyder, as we mentioned, is an expatriate of the Bluff City who has gone on to have a fruitful career in the realms of folk, rock, and country.
For such a seemingly easygoing guy, Snyder's music deals with some pretty heavy subject matter.
Yeah, Todd is a passionate observer of the world, though he said often that he doesn't want his songs to feel too preachy in their approach.
Rather, I suppose, he hopes that his songs inspire listeners to investigate the topics he finds seminal and form their own conclusions.
Exactly, but that doesn't mean that he's afraid to lay his feelings out for his fans when he sees it as appropriate. Todd closes his latest album with a very poignant song. It's called A Timeless Response to Current Events.
Yep, that's the one where he assumes the role of a street corner preacher and raps about hypocrisy in our culture, right? The one where he says, ain't that some... Let me paraphrase this one a bit. He says, ain't that some BS?
Yes, that's the one. And I appreciate you self-correcting there for our listeners.
No problem at all. Now let's check back in on the show. Here's more of Todd Snyder, his thoughts, and his songs live on Beale Street Caravan.
The woman and I, we was in Houston and we had played like 9 nights in a row and we were, well, our lead singer was whining. It won't work this morning. Well, I just can't punch in. It's too many questions. Too many questions underneath my skin. I'm so confused. I can't help but feel it like I am being you. I did like they told me to do. I settled down. Now I'm going crazy. Lord, I'm working this job.
Shoot.
Miss Virgie tended bar at a shack out in the hill. It never paid her no money, boy, but it paid up all of her bill. She must have been 80 years old, but her heart was warm and her beer was cold. She gave away more of it than she ever sold, and she'd be smiling all the time. I used to sing off in the corner of that place every Friday night. There'd be this loud crowd of cowboys, bikers and barroom fights. They're drinking beer and they were carrying on. Not a one of them had listened to one of my songs. But old Miss Virgie, she'd be singing along. She said she knew some of them by heart. But one night after closing, they poured me a beer. Said, come over here and sit down, you ish. I got something you need to hear. She said, life isn't easy getting through. Everybody gonna try to make it tough on you. I'll tell you right now, though, if you dig what you do, nobody's ever gonna get you down. She said, life too short to worry. Life too long to wait. Too short not to love everybody. Life too long to hate. I meet a lot of men to haggle and finagle all the time. Trying to save a nickel, maybe make it down. Not me, no siree, say, I ain't got no time. Well, pick it down and rock. That was disappointed I had shoes on. I went in and saw my doctor about a year ago. He said he thought that maybe some of the reason I had been in such poor health all these years is because I was always walking around with no shoes on. And drugs, too. He said that drugs, too, were part of it. I figured I'd at least meet him halfway, right? I ain't seen no virgin. It's probably been 30-some years. I've been bumming around this country. I sing my songs for tips and beers, mostly beers. Now the nights are long, the drive is tough, hotels are weird and the pay sucks. I can't dig without doing enough. It never ever gets me down. I'm always singing. Life is too short to worry, man. Too long to wait. Too short not to love everybody. Life too long to hate. You're letting me meet a lot of men haggle. Finagle all the time. Trying to save a nickel and make it down. And not me. No sweet Lord, I ain't got no time. You wanna try singing one? We'll see how we do. Life too short to worry. Life too long to wait. Too short not to love everybody. Life too long to hate. I meet a lot of men haggle and finagle all the time. Trying to save a nickel and make it down. Oh, not me. Oh, no sweet said that I ain't got no time. I said not me. No siree, baby, doll ain't got no time.
Hey. Yeah. Here on the Bill Street Caravan with Todd Snyder, could you tell me your impressions, your feelings about being back here in Memphis, Tennessee?
Yeah, I always look forward to coming here. My father's buried here, and my first bandmates are here. They just got off the bus and got to reunite with them. But also this town, like Keith Sykes, nurtured me and taught me how to do this here and got me a record contract. And I always felt like this was the city that made me feel most like I could sing. I never really sang it at home in Oregon. I started here. So I always look forward to coming back. And I just have a lot of friends. Zeke Logan, the Dickinson brothers, Amy Levere, this music scene is one of my favorite ones, you know. It's everybody loves the Memphis music scene.
How did you even end up in this area from Oregon?
I was in Texas, and I was trying to be a folk singer. And Keith Sykes, who lives here, I kept noticing that, like, Jerry Jeff Walker and John Prine and all these people would record his songs. And my dad was in a bar here working, and he found out where he lived. So I just went to his house and gave him my tape, and he started helping me after that.
I mean, what did that feel like? I mean, what age was this for you? And to have to be under the wing of a writer who had been well accomplished at that point.
Yeah, I was only 21, and I had so much hope and loved music so much. And when he told me that he felt like I could do it, it was exactly what I needed. It made me work really hard at it every day and made up tons of songs. I don't think I could ever repay him. And his wife, Jereen, too, they both made me feel like I could do it, and I still hang on to that.
I mean, at that point in time, Memphis was in an interesting place musically. I mean, you kind of cut through at a time where there weren't a lot of different things going on. I mean, how'd that feel to sort of carve your own path at a time like that in the city?
Yeah, there wasn't a thing happening at the time. The Stax thing was over, the Sun thing was over. Chips Moman was going to start a new thing. That didn't really take off, so there wasn't a lot of studio stuff going on. But now I feel like, you know, Lucero, maybe that's the main traveling band from here. But you know, even still, I guess a studio hasn't really popped out. I could see that happening again, you know. What about, like, the 3-6 Mafia, dude? Aren't they doing a show soon?
Yeah, they'll be back home, or they'll be in South Haven at Landa Center. They'll be sort of doing their reunion show. They haven't performed together.
And that was a Stax-esque level thing that happened. They won all those Grammys and stuff.
I think some people might be surprised to know that you have an appreciation for the Hypnotized Camp Posse.
Oh, well, yeah, I do.
Through experience and through just proximity to these same streets and valleys and pathways that so many legendary musicians and songwriters have walked. Do you keep some Memphis with you everywhere you go?
For sure. I feel like when I first came here, I was really a lyric-driven person, and I thought of songs as more in the sense of lyrics. And then Keith turned me on to Booker T and the MGs, which changed my life and still my favorite band. And through them, I felt like I really learned about groove, which is probably the most important part of a song, is what's the beat to it. And then melody, too. So I came from Texas, where they're into words. Not like they're not into words here, because some of the best lyrics ever came from here. But boy, if you can't lay down like an Al Jackson type groove in this town, you can't make it here. And so in that, I feel like I've always tried to keep my music something that you could move to, or that had a nice pocket in it.
What are some of the things that you do when you come into town?
Sure, I always go to Huey's in Midtown first, and then there's that record store, Shangri-La. I always go over there. And then there's at the bottom of the Gilmore, there's Fino's, man. Those are the three places I go every time I'm in town.
Awesome.
Yeah, and then I still like to go down to Beale if it's a Saturday afternoon or something. I love, you know, the blues guys will play, like, for free. That's some of the best music in the world, really, you know.
And you have so much merch. I think it's a testament to the many things you've done and the many places that you've been. I mean, from bandanas to CDs. I even saw, like, a wooden model of the cabin where this album was inspired. I mean, how have you grown since leaving Memphis?
This thing has been a surprise to me, because I was evolved out of being like a busker, and it just keeps getting more and more organized, and there's a big team around it, and I like them all. I'm really grateful for them. And like you said, we sell all kinds of stuff, and you know, I'm 50 something now, so when I was in this town, I think most of the people that knew me would have thought that I probably would have quit by now, or maybe at least just not been able to let people organize it. Like, I was a really flighty young person, and in my older age, I guess I'm a little easier to manage or something, you know, maybe. Most days, anyway.
Could you tell me a bit about how the world today influences these songs you're playing now?
Sure. I've always been very liberal-minded or lefty, and I think the crowd kind of knows it. I try to do it with some respect for people that aren't. But, like, I draw the line at, like, racism or sexism or things like that. I don't see those as, like, opinions that I'm supposed to tolerate, or those things are offensive to me. And so I try to you know, stay on the right side of that with my songs. And I also just try to make it so, like, I don't necessarily want people to learn anything from the show, but if you are trying to take something away from it, then maybe I would hope that it would, that you'd want to be a nicer person, you know, like they used to say when people first went and saw Rocky, they'd come out of it wanting to fight. And I always thought, like, I hope I could do a concert that would be the opposite of that. Like, you'd go to the concert and leave thinking, I wish I could buy a drink for someone I don't know, you know. And hopefully that's what happens. And that's the most political stuff I think I can contribute.
Could you tell me, I mean, a bit about this third installment of songs that are sort of inspired by the space you are in life now?
Yeah, there's a part of Nashville that I really love, the Johnny Cash part, which is in, he was from here. Or the altruistic sort of artsy-fartsy side. And I remember when I lived here, there was a huge rivalry, and I still think it's because in Nashville, there's so many people that get into music for money, which is kind of an oxymoron. It's really hard to get money out of music. It turns you into kind of a shyster or whatever. And people here just do it for the music. And almost across the country, the reward for music is the sound of music. And in Nashville, you, people move there because they want music to get a car or something like that. That tends to not work, and people in Memphis have zero tolerance for it. I still appreciate that. I'd like to see that side of... I wouldn't mind seeing that rub off on Nashville more.
Awesome. Well, I think one last thing. I think the one thing that we have in common is it was an interview with Jimmy Buffett that sort of kick-started my thing, and I think that he sort of helped put some energy into your thing as well. So that's one thing we share in common. Yeah. So I told him when I got to meet him, you know, I'll let you borrow the name JB for a while, but as two Buffett alums, it's good to meet you.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, thank you. I really enjoyed visiting with you, man. Thanks for putting me on.
Here's more from Todd Snyder, live on Beale Street Caravan.
If I do another one too. Let me sing these.
first day in Nashville, it didn't seem like much of one. I was drinking till I had fallen asleep out in the sun. Working on this song, I guess I'm still working on. It's called Where Will I Go Now That I'm Gone. When that idea first came to me, I was only 22. By 25, I had realized that it was all I could do to make it to the end. But then again, I always knew if I never got it finished, I'd die trying to. And then last night, I thought I might have had it right here in my hotel. But it faded out the further sleep that I fell. When I woke up this morning, I was more than twice my age, and I had left myself this note here on another empty page. They said, where will I go now that I'm gone? They said, maybe you've been chasing a song too long. It's turned into a song about a song you're working on, man. Come on. It's gone. Let it go. But you know, giving up a dream, that's a lot like making one come true. It's easy to sit around talking about it, hard to go out and do. But for this one last question, I will give up on this song. Where will I go now that I'm gone? Now that I'm gone, now that I'm gone, where will I go?
Bye.
Todd Snyder live on Beale Street Caravan. For more information on Todd, head over to toddsnyder.net.
Be sure to keep up with Todd and his tour as he'll be visiting more of his former hometowns and maybe even yours as he closes out the year.
It's a show that encapsulates the life and the career of an artist who is just as unique to the history of Memphis music now as he was when he first rolled into our town years ago. Special thanks to our supporters, AutoZone, Memphis Tourism, Arts Memphis, Tennessee Arts Commission, and Tennessee Tourism for their support in making Beale Street Caravan possible.
We like to remind our listeners to please show your support for public broadcasting. You won't find programming like this anywhere else.
You can find Beale Street Caravan on all the social media outlets. Do you love Memphis music? Tell us why and use the hashtag #IListenToMemphis.
Go to our website at BealeStreetCaravan.com and sign up for our monthly newsletter to find out where the caravan is going to be next.
And you can always keep up with Beale Street Caravan via our podcast that's available through iTunes. We'll be back next week. So until then, I'm Pat Mitchell-Worley.
And I'm Jared Boyd.
And you've been listening to the sounds of Memphis on Beale Street Caravan.